some recommendations, or can the city, just the thought that the city council might send a message to the comprehensive plan that basically says, hey, you're revising the plan, look at reducing the number of zones. Because that message is not.
Well, we've just got, and I'm not sure they're ready to do that. We've just got, I talked to Julie Hashem yesterday, she was in this conference as well. And so was Valley, so it was nice for several of us to be able to get on the same page with housing stuff. But Julie and Tom Luttrell have just hired the new planner. Actually, I think two of them. There may be a subcontractor that comes in for slightly different reasons as well. And they're getting ready to have their first big meeting. I think they've met with him. It is a male. I don't know who it is. Met with him, and then I think that he's not going to... He didn't make it to the comps meeting last night, obviously, which is why I didn't show up either. But then I believe he's scheduled to come to the next one.
To the next one, yeah.
So it'll be kind of an orientation. What are we going to do about the comp plan? How are we going to move forward on that? What chapters are divvied up? How it's going to work? And then I think something will definitely be in his court to help with Julie to help redo this and see what the council wants to do about
it. I think the strategy of trying to make tweaks to the existing ordinances will work short term, but the longer term solution is...
We've had a lot of trouble. There's a lot of people that are also worried about contract zones or spot zoning. That comes up all the time, and people, they hiss, and contract zones, you know, this kind of stuff. What it means is that I come in and say, what I want to do on my lot here in the middle of this zone is not working for me. I want to do something that's not currently allowed. So I'm going to come to planning and to a council and say, can I have a variance? Can I have an exception? This spot is the only place I can do it, and I would like for it to be. Now, what I feel about contract zones is that it's just that. It's a contract between the city and the entity. So the city says, yes, you can do that, but you need to do the following things. You need to make sure you don't bother your neighbors, no loud noises, no lights, no whatever it is. And then the entity says, okay, I agree to that contract. What I want to do is be able to have a child care in an area where I'm not. And I'll make sure that it doesn't bother the neighbors, I get them signed, whatever it is. So it's a contract between the two. But where I was going with this, it also indicates that the zoning is not working for everybody.
Right.
If you have to come forward in the first place and say, I need to do something in my area that I can't currently do, well, we need to look at that. I mean, you're looking at even a history of a approved or non-approved contract zone requests over the past 5 years would say, here's our problem child, here's our areas, here's what people need and want to do with their properties within reason that they're not being allowed to do. To look at all that as well. So, it's dominoes. You know, one thing leads to another, and it moves on, and it gets huge. But we should try to come back to our little piece of the pie that we're supposed to address, which is infill, if we want to call it urban density and infill, and small houses. And I think it's going to be different for different areas. The industrial park, I don't know that there's going to be a lot of housing infill necessary and required in the industrial park.
Nor do you want.
Residentials, yeah, but I don't want to restrict it just to residentials either. We have an area west of Camden Street where there's a lot of housing. As you're further out, closer to Penn Bay, between Penn Bay Acres, south of Penn Bay Acres, you know, up on the west side in there. That's still housing, even though it's very close to a commercial zone, you know. And I think mixed use, there's a Camden Street overlay. It's still sitting on the shelves up there, but it incorporates mixed use, where you do have housing and you have residential, you have commercial, you have some restrictions on what you can put in there, so you're not going to have a big box store right in the middle of it, you know, things of that sort. But it all works together. There's no reason. We used to separate again after World War II. We separated and said, okay, we're going to live over here, and we're going to shop over here, and never the twain shall meet. You know,
we had
big
neighborhood grocery stores in all the neighborhoods in town.
Up
until 15 years ago.
Right. But it's more the European model, you know, where you go to the bakery and you go to the butcher and you go to all these things on your way home, and maybe even every day as you go by.
We have transitional business zones.
Yeah, right? We do.
And that, to me, seems like a fantastic opportunity to do what we're looking at here.
Yes. So, and knowing that as we go forward also that there is a lot of resistance out there in the city to both of the issues that we take up, there's resistance to infill and resistance to allowing smaller units, smaller dwelling units. I think the council is probably going to have to take up the issue. Once we make a recommendation and the council chooses to put it on the agenda, they're going to have to take up the issue and decide what they think is best for Rockland, knowing, as we do with almost everything, knowing that not everybody agrees. Yeah, that's just going to have to be the way it is, because the people that disagree with this idea are very vehement about it, and I don't think that their minds will be changed, no matter how many experts we bring in for presentations or education or ideas or even restrictions. Mm-hmm. It was one thing that, who was it, Mr. Emerson said yesterday, if you restrict too heavily on your accessory dwelling units or your tiny homes, you put in more and more and more restrictions, then you are, in essence, saying, we're not doing that here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You restrict yourself right out of making it happen, that possibility. So we'll
guard
against all those things as we move forward.
The regular houses that we have in town, because of the way the lot sizes and things are written in code, virtually every house in town is non-compliant.
Mm-hmm. Certainly many of the auxiliary dwelling units are. That's the John Ray brought forward a month or so ago, an auxiliary dwelling unit. Basically, what Valley had wanted to do, the ordinance got a little bit dense and complex, so that's why it ultimately was not going forward. She wanted to say that you can have a detached dwelling unit. Right now it's allowed to have one that's attached, that's either inside or attached. And she wanted to say, if your garage is not attached, it's silly to have to build a pergola to attach the two, and you know, you can go forward with this. But that failed. It didn't go forward to a vote because there was so much resistance to it. And what that would have done, John brought forward a little slideshow, and there's about a dozen currently non-conforming auxiliary dwelling units that are detached, and that would have put them into compliance. They were built, you know, eons ago, some of them. So that's another thing we could hopefully accomplish along the way, is to bring some of these properties into compliance. What else? Do we feel like we have a kind of a handle on where we're going?
It's maybe we should pick a place to start.
Yeah.
Because now we have eight balls in the air.
Yeah.
And do we have to use those terms, infill and tiny houses?
No.
Because I think
they're very charged.
Getting rid of, and also we're kind of getting rid of both of those ideas.
Yep.
Really?
Well,
the infill is an overlay, and we're talking about, instead of doing that, going in from the bottom and changing the things that need to be changed. And we're talking about not doing tiny houses because tiny houses don't conform.
Let's just change the rules so if somebody wants to build a house that happens to be smaller, that's allowed.
But it could conform to the... Yeah. So
as long as we don't have a minimum.
I think we're more concerned with creating livable space.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Affordable,
livable, more dense space.
Maybe.
I mean, there is a building code that anybody has to meet the requirements.
Right, because like the heart of all of this is, what does this community need to remain a viable community?
Mm-hmm. And to remain a viable community for a variety of people.
Right.
For people of all ages and all income levels and you know, all of that sort of thing.
So using good terms like accessibility and affordability and getting rid of those ones that everybody flinches when they hear tiny houses or infill.
Well, even urban density and small houses are still, you know, they're just cover-up buzzwords. So if anybody comes up with new things to call it, great.
The idea of bringing existing buildings into compliance, like
phrasing
it like that, makes it sound like, oh, these already exist, so let's get them to comply.
Well, even that didn't fly the last time.
This is also about elder care, and this is about, you know, like...
Some of the units that Dave Foley presented yesterday have built-in areas for caregivers, whether that's a child that's looking after a parent or somebody that's hired and they have a separate unit. They have maybe an upstairs-downstairs kind of thing, and the caregiver lives upstairs and all of those. So.
Which would reduce, like, larger-level financial drains. Mm-hmm. Like at Penn Bay, we have a lot of elder patients who come in simply because their families can't take care of them. Mm-hmm. They stay there forever and ever, and... Mm-hmm. The state's paying it.
Well, they presented that yesterday, and one of the things look at the cost of putting someone into assisted living versus the cost of keeping them to be able to age in place with a caregiver in the home. Mm-hmm. So those are certainly ways to do that.
So and that would be an accessory dwelling within the house kind of idea?
There's three different accessory dwelling status areas. One is within the house, like a mother-in-law suite.
Which could be a caregiver.
Yeah. Another one is building on, you know, a building out the back. So you have one that's attached, but, you know, you enter through the back or building out the side, wherever it is, your house will take it. So it's attached, but it's put onto that. And then the third is, like, making a garage apartment where it's completely detached.
So
separate.
The